Black heart, gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Blackheart Gold Podcast. I am Hawkeye State, joined as always by Blackheart Gold Pants co-editor, Oops Pal Surprise. Oops, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful. As our listeners can probably already tell, I'm not checking in from a 3-foot solid bank vault anymore. We've actually got a little better equipment here. And The downside is now I really don't have an excuse for sounding lousy. I can't really blame it on the microphone anymore. Now I'm just whenever someone asks me why I sound like an 11-year-old, I just have to cry in response.
Well, we're glad you finally moved out of that perpetual hurricane you were living in before.
And also the bank vault was 5,000 feet below sea level. It was underwater. I don't know why I was going in there to begin with.
We have Jason from 11 Warriors joining us for tonight's podcast. Jason, thanks for being with us. How you doing tonight?
Excellent, excellent. Thanks for having me on.
Good to hear from you. We tried to get the guy from Buckeye Battlecry on. Unfortunately, he was too busy writing crap. 116 comments right now. Jason, it's been kind of an odd season for Ohio State. We're kind of immune to, the occasional loss to a top-ranked team. USC caught Ohio State right at the end of their game in Columbus this year, although it was a far better performance than they put up last year against the same squad. But the kind of oddball win at Wisconsin and the Purdue game are kind of new wrinkles for Ohio State this year. I'm not used to seeing them, frankly, lose to a team they shouldn't lose to. What do you think is the reason for the, ever so slight downturn this year?
I think the first and foremost, probably youth. I mean, there's so many sophomores on the offense and defensive side of the ball. It speaks well for the future, obviously, but young teams don't always know how to put away teams they should put away, and in other times they can maybe take teams lightly they shouldn't take lightly, I guess in Purdue's case. I think at the beginning of the year, most Buckeye fans probably would have said optimistic outlook would be like, maybe a 10-2 season, going to the Rose Bowl, maybe to set some things up for next year. But I don't think any of us imagined that, one of the losses would come at the hands of Purdue.
But at the same time, you're still in really good position for that 10-2 and the Rose Bowl. So so would you say that that upset aside, that this has been a much better season than you or anybody else could have plausibly anticipated, or in light of your expectations, like how are you grading the season so far?
I think it's, like I said, I think it's going to end up, if Ohio State plays well enough the last 2 weeks, I think things will end up the way some of us thought they would, but I guess the road to getting there was a lot different. I think that, looking at the schedule before the year, you're looking at USC and then, Penn State or maybe another top Big Ten team being the second loss. I think a big problem was Tressel spent a lot of the summer saying that, basically Pryor was, I don't know if it's an exact quote, but I think at one point in time he said he was, 100 times better as a quarterback or something to that effect. It kind of got everyone excited. He did throw the ball pretty well in the spring game, and then, of course, at Big Ten Media Days, he got the nod for, preseason offensive player of the year. So that kind of got things rolling. And then you look up after Purdue and you're like, you take a look at the stats and you're starting to wonder, hey, is this guy, is he progressing at all? Is he learning anything? It seems like he had better performances as a freshman than he did at times this year. So, it's definitely been bumpy. But, if I had to grade it, I would say probably, somewhere around the C or B range. I mean, they played well at times, like the Wisconsin game you mentioned, that could have easily gone the other way. the offense, you know, still to this day scares, I think, most Buckeye fans. And even with, you know, Stanzi out Saturday, it's a, you know, the Buckeye offense can go into a shell again, then we could be in for a long afternoon.
Now, it's interesting you say that Ohio State fans are worried about the offense, because there's a strange dichotomy in Ohio State that I haven't seen from pretty much any other team that Iowa's played this year. The yardage numbers are very lackluster. Pryor has exactly three games where he's thrown over 200 yards. Mm-hmm. He's had a couple games where he's thrown under 100, and I think due in part to the fact, especially against Illinois, that he didn't play a full game. But despite that fact, they put up a ridiculous amount of points. Is that based on, you know, field position and turnovers, or is there some other secret that I'm missing here as far as the Ohio State offense goes?
I think, turnovers have probably played a big role. I think at one point in time last week, I thought I heard that 15 different players have interceptions on the defense.
Dude.
Or 11 or 15 or something just outrageous. And they've been really opportunistic back there. Coleman has been a complete ball hawk. And at times, you know, like Wisconsin, case in point, they bailed the offense out. Or rolls, you know, return on that two-point conversion against Navy in the opener and things like that. So the defense has definitely been there to kind of lift up the offense. And the only team that's really, you know, out of USC, the only, you know, Purdue kind of figured out the defense, hit a lot of short passes and was able just to control the ball. And, you know, Elliott played a hell of a game. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the blueprint for Mr. Stan, or for Vandenberg, is it?
Vandenberg, or you can call him the Mandenberg.
The Mandenberg.
Either way,
right.
It's fine with us.
It seems like that's what you guys might want to try to do. I mean, I don't know. If I was a coach, I would kind of dial up what Danny Hope did and try to apply that offensively against the Buckeye defense, because it's a good defense. But if you throw a lot of underneath stuff and just kind of move the chains short intervals, I think that you can move stuff. You know, you can move down the field on them.
Well, I think that you've got sort of a kindred spirit in Norm Parker and the Iowa defense in that regard. Cause you never really see teams over the last two or three years just do whatever they want against the Iowa defense. But it seems like the teams that really make hay are the ones that are doing it 5 to 8 yards at a time, whether it be on the ground or through the air, rather than trying to attack the linebackers deep in coverage. So, do you think that that's going to play into Pryor's skill sets, or is he going to have to start to improvise with the ball, or what's the key to success here?
Well, I'm sure you guys are well aware, he's still very much a work in progress, and actually, I think he's already Marino. It's over, guys. But no, I think the thing that he actually does worst at is dump passes to backs and screen passes. I know they've been trying to work that a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but he just, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to have good touch leading backs or wide receivers on screens on short passes. Slants a lot of times will be off target. So what he does really well, obviously, is you know, when third and nine comes up and he looks downfield, doesn't see anybody open, and then it looks like he's gliding and glides to the down marker and out of bounds for a first down before anybody can touch him. That's completely demoralizing, I'm sure, to defenses, but I don't think at this point in his career he's still not going to pick anybody apart passing, obviously.
Is it a genetic, like, mutant superpower that he seems to be able to glide to exactly 1 yard in front of the first down marker, no matter what yardage it is? I've seen him do it on 3rd and 17, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 5. It is the most maddening thing I've ever seen. It's illegal. It should be illegal, right?
Yeah, you raise a good point. I mean, I never really thought about it, but he oftentimes does go out of bounds 1 yard past the marker. And, you know, I think earlier in the year – sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's uncanny. Keep going.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think earlier in the year some folks raised on some other sites, some more of the mainstream sites, they were saying that, you know, maybe he is not a big fan of contact, was floated earlier in the year. And I don't know if that – you know, dictates to him whether he should say, okay, I got my first down, I need to duck out. Seems like he's squared up and kind of taken on some defenders a little bit better in the last few weeks, so he is seeking out more contact. But, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, just the fact that he will get that extra yard, and of course, every announcing crew on earth has to point out the deceptive speed, but it's interesting until you see it for the first time, and with you guys off the schedule last year, I don't, you know, this will be your first time, so it should be fun to start.
Yes, all of our first times are always fun to start.
Quite, they're always awkward.
Now, and it always ends in tears.
I'm not speaking of ending in tears. I'm not going to lie to you, Jason. I had visual, you know, cognizance of the fact that you played Penn State last week, but between the pure agony of the prior 3 hours and the whiskey, I didn't see a whole lot of it.
Sure.
What is there to take out of the Penn State game that we hadn't yet seen from Ohio State?
Well, the biggest takeaway to me is that for the first time all year, Pryor not only didn't make a mistake in the sense of a turnover, but even when he would play like the Toledos and the Navies of the world, and I guess I shouldn't lump Navy in with Toledo, they're a much better team, but teams outside the Big Ten, some out-of-conference opponents that aren't exactly stellar, even if he's not throwing an interception, he'll at least throw in a triple coverage at least once a game. You're just like, what are you thinking? And I mean, I don't know if you saw any of the Purdue highlights when he was going down and get sacked. He had the ball over his head trying to make a play when he's wrapped up and both times led to fumbles. So it seemed like last week he really did a good job at Penn State of controlling the game and being a game manager and just making smart plays and taking what, you know, it sounds cliche, but he took what Penn State gave him. And it was, you know, it was kind of refreshing to see a whole game go by where not a single pass went into double or triple coverage. So that's a plus, I suppose. And I guess the other thing, too, is the defense really stepped up. I think most Buckeye fans had a feeling that, you know, Penn State might be underestimating the defense a bit. But because at least as Buckeye fans, I think the consensus probably is it might be the best defense since the 0-2 unit. So I think we know we have a good thing on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, obviously you guys do as well. I mean, I think we pretty much did the same thing to Penn State. So on that front, it could be a really physical game Saturday.
Yeah, it does seem like, I mean, the scripts obviously weren't entirely the same, and it's not like OSU was losing 10-5 in the fourth quarter or anything like that. But it did seem like the OSU-PSU game was the second time that we had seen Clark basically taken out of the game mentally on his home field, and it was by doing the exact same thing, just pressuring the hell out of him and not really giving him anything to work with, and he just sort of crawled into his shell after that. Do you really think that this is your best defense since 0-2?
I think so. I mean, you know, we had a lot of names last year. You had Laurinaitis, obviously, Jenkins, Freeman, all those cats. But I think the reason it is, you know, obviously the linebacking core from last year might be better. I'm probably one of the small minority of Buckeye fans that think that, you know, Laurinaitis probably got more accolades than he deserved. I mean, he's a fine linebacker. And he's
no.
Fine.
No. So,
well, his dad was in the Legion of Doom. There's not nearly enough accolades for that guy.
I can remember people complaining when Lucas won the MVP in hoops last year, and everyone was like, what about Evan Turner? And, you know, and Turner could have won it, but that was just like, that was our payback for Laurinaitis winning all the, you know, the Big Ten Defensive MVP awards. I mean, he kind of goes to those teams with the, you know, the big names and certainly players with dads that used to jump off the turnbuckles. I mean, that's only going to help your cause. But I think that the difference between last year's defense, the major difference is, you know, the whole defensive front is back, and they rotate, you know, 8 to 10 guys throughout the course of the game, and they're all pretty experienced, whereas the last couple years they were pretty green and kind of learning and growing. And I think that's where it all starts, because I think the secondary could be passed on if a quarterback has ample time, but not many quarterbacks have had time to really do that this year.
Now, looking at your running game, Pryor actually leads the team in both attempts and yards, which means since he leads you in passing and rushing, there'd be no doubt who Northwestern would target.
Definitely.
My guess would be Lariat Clothesline would be their method of choice.
Either that or a shiv.
Yes, yeah. A shiv could be a possibility. They are all straight out of, you know, prison at Northwestern.
No doubt.
But I noticed that despite the fact that Brandon Sains got the majority of the yards for, or at least the plurality of the yards for the running backs this year, that Heron got most of the carries last week. Has there been kind of a rotation that way, or are they using him in different situations?
Heron suffered a concussion. I'm trying to think of what week it went, what week it happened. He was the number one coming into the season and kind of got to a slow start, averaged probably about 3 or 3.5 yards a carry through the first 5 weeks or so. I'm pretty sure it was at Illinois in the fourth game of the season. He suffered a concussion. And from there, he took a couple games off while getting his head right and all that. And then Sane kind of emerged a little bit and showed something that he hadn't shown last year. And then at the same time, Jordan Hall, a freshman, was actually one of Pryor's teammates at Jeanette in Pennsylvania, is getting some carries too. But last week was the first week probably since week three, Toledo, that they were all three healthy at the same time. A part of it is that, you know, the injuries, and then another part of it too is that, you know, we have three running backs and none of them are Beanie Wells, you know, kind of spoiled in that sense for a couple of years. So, you know, it's back to guys that, you know, will go down with a shoestring tackle at the line of scrimmage instead of someone that just stiff arms his way, you know, through there. So a little bit of an adjustment there, but and maybe also like the fact that Ohio State went to the zone read and shotgun formations almost exclusively through Illinois, through Purdue or Minnesota, I guess, probably limited some carries for the backs as well. Got away from the traditional eye and that day play that they love to run so often.
I think I just misspoke there. I think I was looking at the numbers for saying when I said that, but they basically split last week. So I see what you mean. Heron missed basically 3 out of 4 games and had 2 carries in the one that he didn't miss there in the middle of the season.
Yeah, and they'll go a series. It's not like they'll platoon two running backs in the same series. It'll be a Sane series and then a Boom series or a Heron series and then, you know, maybe Sane series again and then back to Heron. I'd imagine Heron will probably start, get the first series against you guys this weekend, but I think both will probably play and both will probably end up with, you know, I would guess anywhere between 10 and 15 carries apiece.
Do you think it'll be a pretty run-heavy approach at the Iowa defense, or do you think that they're going to try to see what Pryor can do with the ball in his hand?
It's really tough because I don't think Ohio State's a good running team this year. And obviously they've had struggles passing, and I think you guys have an exceptional secondary too. At least Spivey's amazing. So I don't really see them wanting to challenge the Iowa secondary through the air. But at the same time, I don't know if they're going to be able to get going on the ground to the effect that they need to. My guess is it might play out similar to how the Penn State game played out, where Tressel will be content to let the defense and special teams, you know, kind of dictate when the offense should try to score, which is completely agonizing if you're a fan, but wins games. So,
yeah, I could see that. And it seemed like in the second half of the Northwestern game that Northwestern was just as content to be on defense because they knew that way Tyler Sash couldn't pick off the ball and take it to the house on the other side. So I would imagine that Ohio State would be plenty conservative in their game plan and just sort of let Iowa beat itself on offense.
Well, you know, right, but at the same time, like, Iowa's a team like Ohio State that doesn't like to beat itself either, you know? I mean, obviously, well-coached team this year. I don't think with
Vandenberg that they have a choice.
Well, that's a good point. I'm worried about the guy. I don't know why. I mean, you hear these stories in sports every now and then of the guy that comes in unheralded. You get guys like, what's he got, like 30 attempts this year, goes into a hostile environment and just plays well. I mean, it happens like so often. And I think I said in a post the other day, you know, if Iowa is in the game or leading or close in the fourth quarter, then it's a completely dangerous game at that point in time.
Yeah, all bets are off.
The one thing I would say in countering that would be my boss's husband told me today that he felt much, much better about Vandenberg because he handled his first press conference well.
Uh-oh.
And as despicable and terrifying as Pat Hardy might be, it's not quite the same as going into the horseshoe. I have this strange, like recurring nightmare that we're going to get the ball back with a chance to win at the end of this game, and the 2-minute drill is going to be an unmitigated disaster.
It could play out like that. I mean, it very, very well could be. I mean, you just have to see. I mean, I don't think he can go down from how he played last week, though, right?
I would have a hard time believing he could, but
Let's not tempt fate.
Let's just say anything's possible. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I think early on he's probably gonna in the first two plays or so he's gonna probably say, whoa, you know, this defense is quite a bit faster than what I played last week. At least I hope he's saying that. but I don't, like I said, I don't know. I mean, the High State's got what, 18 minutes of film to watch on the guy. He's got, you know, good frame, strong arm, seems pretty smart. Like I read another post on another site, an Iowa site, where
what?
Kind of
wait, hold on.
Oh, boo.
Reading other sites.
Sorry. Yeah. So, I don't know. Someone sent it along to me, but it was a review of basically the number of formations he ran compared to Stanzi the week before. And, you know, basically the gist of it was that he got a lot of the playbook. I mean, they weren't exactly giving him everything, but, he got maybe 90% of the formations and plays that maybe Stanzi would get on a normal game. So.
And see, I have a theory on that, too, and that's that I don't think that especially this offensive staff is capable of switching the playbook just because we have a different quarterback in there. I think they went with the same playbook they were going to run with Stanzi, and that was the reason why it was 9 for 27. I would expect something a lot more conservative this week. If one, because Stanzi's forte all year, and there's a great post on Doc Saturday about this week, where not only has he been really big in the fourth quarter, but he's been big on the big play. His yards per attempt numbers aren't great. His completion percentage isn't great. His interception number makes me want to curl up in a ball and hide underneath my covers. But he's a great deep ball thrower and always seems to be able to find a guy open, especially late. Last week they had open guys against Northwestern deep, and Vandenberg either couldn't get enough air into the ball or was off target to the left or the right. And so I would expect that you see a lot less of the deep pass from them this week, especially considering it's his first start and it's in Columbus. And given that Purdue had so much success basically running the short passing game all the way down the field.
True. Yeah, that's a good point. I think I read that article on DocSat as well. I think it summed it up pretty well by saying that, you know, the guy might throw four, you know, second half interceptions, but he cleans up his messes, I think was his line. It's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, what do you have against Indiana? I think like 3 second-half pass touchdowns over 70 yards or something ridiculous.
He had two in the fourth quarter. Back-to-back plays, essentially. One for, God, about 90.
92.
Yeah, and the next one was for 76. But that was Indiana imploding to a certain extent, too. Like their secondary was a little lackluster. But
well, sure. Those were good play calls. Give them that.
They were good play calls, yeah. I'll give them that. But then he found the open receiver Let his receivers do what they needed to do after he got the ball, sure. But there were also a lot of missed tackles in there, a couple of missed coverages.
A little bit. Now, Vandenberg's going to be seeing 8 or 9 guys in the box the entire game, right? Like, there's no way that OSU puts only 7 there, right?
I think they might, actually. If you go and look at some of the Penn State tape and anything recently, they've been able to get enough pressure with 4 typically on the front or the defensive front will drop some linebackers in his own coverage. And especially with you guys so banged up at running back, I'm not sure that the staff will commit that many guys to the box. I mean, obviously they're coaching a big time school and I'm just writing about it on the internet. So they know quite a bit more than I do about what to do and what not to do in these situations. But I don't know if I would guarantee that it's going to happen.
Now, you said that this is maybe the best defense they've had since 02. What's the strength in particular here?
It's still the line. Just the defensive front is amazing. Cameron Hayward stepped up. Gibson has been good for 2 years now. A couple guys in the middle of the line, Dexter Larimore, Todd Denlinger. Larimore was hurt for a while. He played really, really well against USC, kind of shutting their run down early. And he went out leg injury. Came back for maybe a couple plays at Penn State last week. Probably go a couple more this week. I don't think he's back to 100% yet, but of course, I think as a sophomore, Nathan Williams, it's pretty impressive off the end as well. But just the depth of the line, and Heacock likes to keep the defensive coordinator likes to keep a lot of fresh bodies and a good rotation going. And you know, I think I took what I was. I told someone like maybe start of the third quarter of the Penn State game that you know we talked about earlier, but that blueprint that you guys kind of set against Penn State where. You know, it seemed like your defensive front and linebackers kind of just wore the Penn State line down as the game went on, and the night just got worse and worse and worse for Darrell Clark. And I kind of envisioned that happening, and it pretty much did. Of course, they started out the game pretty solid with a sack, but you know, you could definitely tell that over time, rotating those fresh bodies, it starts to take its toll. A third, fourth quarters, and you know, that's when Tressel likes to play football, I guess.
Now let's purely hypothetically, of course, but let's put the doom shoe on the other foot here.
Okay.
Let's say that OSU is up 10-0, and Pryor runs a bootleg in the end zone, and let's say a couple of the Iowa defenders try to rip him in half, and they end up giving him a high ankle sprain, and Pryor is out for the game. Let's just say that, and then Bowserman comes in. How terrified are you?
Oh, completely terrified. Well, first of all, Pryor, he already has an ankle injury coming in. He suffered it. That's why he was in out of pads the second half of New Mexico State game 2 weeks ago. So he's kind of banged up a little bit. I mean, he played well enough at Penn State that it didn't seem evident probably to most observers that he was hurt. But, yeah, I mean, Bowserman, he's looked really – I don't know, he's a baseball player. I think he was in – I want to say the Blue Jays organization, but I could be way off on that.
So he's like a Chris Winkie?
A little bit. He's older like that. He's blonde, you know, quarterback. He's got all those things that Winkie had except for the Heisman pretty much. But, and at times he's looked really, really solid. Like at spring games, he's thrown some bombs, and he, you know, we'll make some noise in spring games and practice and here and there. But he came in the second half for New Mexico State. I want to say he finished 2 of 9 passing. Now, mind you, this is New Mexico State, and both his only two completions were both like bombs of 50 yards. Like everything underneath was like 5 feet over receiver's head, but he throws a beautiful deep ball. So I guess if you guys play like press coverage, if he has to come in, and maybe we have a good chance. But if you sit back and make him throw underneath, then we could be in trouble.
How does it feel to have a backup quarterback who was the villain at the end of Mario Brothers?
I never thought of that, but now that you mention it, it's kind of cool, honestly.
Yeah, damn right. Much better than being like the villain at the end of Metroid.
Little brain in a jar. Okay.
No, that was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh well. I thought that there was like a pulsating thing.
I think you're right too, but I just wanted to bring a Krang reference into play while we're at it.
Oh yeah, no, that's fair.
Metroid, you're going all the way back to like 86 or 87 now.
Damn right, we go old school here.
Remember that one code where to start it's like all nines and then all K's, and like you get a bunch of cool stuff but you don't even get the ball, like you still have to go and get that first.
Oh nice.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm talking about that.
I always bring the conversation down. Now there is one injury here that normally wouldn't really be worth talking about, but we are talking Ohio State Iowa, and it's all field position and field goals as it is. Petrie's out. Mm-hmm. And Devin, is it Barclay?
Yeah, Barclay
is the new place kicker. From what I'm looking at so far, 2 of 4, nothing over 39 yards.
Yeah, he 1 of 1 at Penn State last week. I think he had a 37-yarder. It looked pretty solid. It was early in the game. I think it put Ohio State up 10-7. So it was at a time when maybe there was some pressure on the kick. But the week before, he had I think 3 second-half chances against New Mexico State, and you know at that point in time, the game was well out of hand. He just completely shanked like 2 of them. Like I mean. As much as Tressel loved his kickers and his special teams, it was kind of scary for a bit. Yeah, 1 of 3, I think, against New Mexico State. So
yeah.
he's a former soccer guy. I don't know if he was on the crew. I know he got a tryout with the crew. Might have got cut by him recently, or obviously last year or so. But so he kind of went through probably college soccer and then MLS and found his way back to Ohio State. But, well, I guess he couldn't have played college soccer then. I take it back. I don't know. He's a backup kicker. He scared us late in the second half against New Mexico State, and then he came in for 1 against Penn State, and made a 37-yarder. But I think more telling was the fact that Tressel could have kicked a 46-yarder or so in the first half against Penn State to go up ahead of when they did go up 10-7. They could have added 3 more, and he opted to punt, took a delay of game penalty. It was from the 29-yard line. Yeah,
oh.
took, a, took a delay game penalty and punished. So we're all pulling our hair out, but that's just something. It just kind of tells you that, you know, maybe Barkley can hit the ones under 35, 40, but outside of that, I don't think he's going to be banging any 55-yarders this weekend.
So, wait. It was fourth and what on the 29-yard line?
Five-ish? I can find out.
Come on!
Oh, yeah, that's the life of a Buckeye.
That's classic Tressel. That is so classic Tressel.
So what did Penn State do on the ensuing possession? Just like three and out?
Yeah, a whole lot of nothing, pretty much. Let me see here. Yeah. I can dig it out.
There you go. Punting is winning.
I guess if you have the arm punter, then why would you bother bringing in the real punter?
Yeah. Why not just like send him back there and have him heave something into the end zone? I mean, that seems to be like the way that Posey scores half of his touchdowns anyway, right?
Yeah, you know, there's something to that. I don't know. It's incredibly frustrating. Guys just really conservative. Obviously, you guys know that. I mean, you saw the USC game, and it's really tough at times, but.
We live it too, pal.
Well, that's true. But yeah, I guess it was 3rd and 8, and then Heron lost 3, so it was 4th and 11. My bad, from the Penn State 29.
Okay. So, well, that's a little better.
Yeah, but the 29. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
He took a delay of game penalty, then we got a touchback, so we basically got 14 yards. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Now, I guess my final question for you before I hand it over to Oops now. Pryor's got a rating of 130.6, which ain't terrible. But DeVere Posey has a quarterback rating of 757.6 based on his one completion.
Oh, yeah.
So when is Ohio State going to – when are they going to bite the bullet and move Posey to quarterback and Pryor to receiver?
You know what? There are plenty of people that pointed that out, I think, in the open thread that, you know, our quarterback and our receiver switched up. But it was a nice pass. I mean, he probably even better catch. Dane Sensenbacher kind of pulled it down one-handed, went over defender's shoulder, pretty good coverage back in the end zone. I mean, it probably pains me to say this, but I'm trying to think of maybe a better ball Pryor's thrown this year. I think the one in the second half against Penn State to Posey was nice, and I guess he had some nice bombs early at Toledo. But yeah, I mean, as much as Pryor struggled this year, it was kind of funny to see the leading receiver on the team coming in and throw a beautiful bomb for 6, but
just aggravating you even more.
Yeah, it's our bizarre world this year, I guess.
Yeah. So the I guess then the critical matchup for the entire game is going to be Posey versus Spivey. Now, does Tressel do a whole lot to get Posey into more favorable matchups, or is he just a straight formation running kind of guy? Like, what do they do with Posey before the snap?
I think you'll see some motion here and there and maybe some movement, but for the most part, they're just going to line up and run their routes. I think last week we saw Tressel and the staff threw wide receiver bubble screens to Posey on 2 consecutive plays that probably went for maybe 25, 20, 22 or so back-to-back. And the reason for that is because Penn State DBs were playing such a soft cushion off the line of scrimmage. I mean, they were given almost like 8 or 9 yards to Posey and the receivers. So they took advantage of that. Penn State rolled their defensive backs up for a little tighter coverage, and that was taken away. But, you know, it was nice to see that at least they would kind of recognize something like that, because for a while, especially under the Beckman regime and most of last year, it seemed like, you know, it was either run the ball or throw a bomb. There was like no underneath, nothing else. Just, you know, give it to Beanie or throw bombs. It's kind of what Ohio State did for a couple of years.
It's like a 14-year-old playing Madden for the first time.
Really? Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So.
Well, Jason, we'll let you get out on it with a prediction for the game. What do you think's going to happen?
I think it's going to be around 21-13 Ohio State. I don't see a lot of points going up on either side. And I think the home crowd's going to help Ohio State out. And obviously the fact that you guys are without the Manzi is going to be something for you to figure out. But I think it's going to be a lot closer than Vegas does right now.
Yeah, what's the line right now for Vegas?
16 or 17, somewhere around there.
It was 17 this morning.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
More importantly, as far as I can recall, and I pay attention to these things a little bit, I don't believe there's been a Division I over under 40 this year. They're almost always between 45 and 60, or if Mike Leach is involved, 98. But this week's Iowa-Ohio State over-under is 36, and it's grossly overstated.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's completely tempting, isn't it?
There's no way that anybody gets to 36.
No.
It's just not going to happen. My prediction for this game is that Ohio State wins at 12-8 on six safeties versus four safeties.
That could very well happen. Well, if you like defense, I think you're going to be in for a treat, because I think both teams are going to bring it on that side of the ball. And you know, Midwesterners, we appreciate that, so I have no problem with that.
Hey, do you happen to know what the weather report's going to be for Saturday?
They're saying beautiful. I'm going to be flying in. I live out of town now, but I'm flying in for the game, and my friends are saying like 60s almost.
Wow. All right.
So, yeah, it's supposed to be really nice. I haven't checked it in maybe 2 days, but early word was it's supposed to be a really nice weekend.
Excellent. Well, Jason, we wish you the absolute worst of luck for the next few days.
Likewise.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll be sure to talk to you just as soon as we're done. Well, let's not kid ourselves. Probably losing to you this week.
Oh, come on. We'll hope for a good game, at least.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, both teams playing hard, right?
There you go. An old college try.